Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Ryan Shaw. Ryan Shaw is a three-time Grammy-nominated R&B and soul artist from Decatur, Georgia, renowned for his powerful vocals and dynamic stage presence. He has released acclaimed albums such as This Is Ryan Shaw, Real Love, and Imagining Marvin, and he has performed alongside legends like Van Halen, Bonnie Raitt, and John Legend. Beyond his recording career, Shaw has starred on Broadway in Motown, the musical, appearing as Stevie Wonder, and frequently headlines orchestral concerts across North America, celebrating the legacy of soul and R&B music. On Saturday, May 3rd at 7:30 p.m. at Klein Hands Music Hall, he will be performing with the BPO in Ryan Shaw Masters of R&B. Tickets are available in the show notes and at bpo.org. In this interview, we discuss the soul in music, writing with Ashford and Simpson, and how audiences will experience the Masters of Soul in a new way at the BPO. I hope you enjoy my interview with Ryan. Ryan Shaw, thank you so much for chatting with us today. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, quite well. I'm down in sunny Florida right now, so that's good.
Fantastic. You have to rub it into the listeners in Buffalo that you're in sunny Florida. Well, you'll be bringing the heat to Buffalo soon. Listen, I'd like to start my interviews by asking, because I think it's interesting for people who live their life in the arts, what is your earliest memory of music?
Oh, wow. My earliest memory of music is probably, is definitely from church. I think I was 5 years old. It's my earliest memory of music. And I remember singing in the choir. And it was the time I got my first solo because the name of the song was called I've Been Redeemed. And I remember the choir director had us singing. We were like five. We were like three. From the age you could talk, we were made to sing in the choir. And so I just remember singing. And apparently I started singing a harmony. And no one, everyone else was singing it. And she stopped the whole choir. She's like, who's singing this note? And then I raised my hand. She was like, who taught you that? And I was like, nothing. It was missing. And she said, come here. And then she gave me the solo. And that's when I had my first solo in the choir. That's my earliest memory.
That's a beautiful story. Wow. Speaking of sort of as we go down memory lane, I'd love to ask, what was the moment when you realized that music and performing was going to be your life's work?
Probably around that same time. I went through a period of time for most of my life where I didn't like to hear my own voice played back to me or recorded voice. But I loved the way people responded to me when I sang. And I think I kind of grew up as a child with like, you know, anger issues, a little bit of low self-esteem kind of thing, because I used to be a chubby kid. And I think from all the, but when I sang, people treated me differently. So I was like, so maybe I should just go through life singing and then I could not feel inferior to people.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of how it evolved, I think.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. In my research for this interview, the word that keeps coming to the forefront of your artistry is soul, both in style of music and in your performance. How would you define soul and how do you bring it to everything you perform?
Well, I define soul as basically the connection that one has to the music. And so for me, soul is not necessarily a genre because I also am a songwriter and I sing everything, but everything I sing becomes soul. And not even that I'm doing like riffing or anything, it's just my connection to the music. If I believe what I'm saying, that's soul. Like for me, even when I first heard Shania Twain back in the day, her song, she had a song on one of her, I think it was her first album, the self-titled album, Life After Love. And when I heard her sing it, I was moved. And to me, that was soul music. So for me, Shania Twain is soul, especially for certain songs that she does, because it's just that special connection that when you sing or if you play or whatever you're doing, it moves people because that's from the soul for me.
When you hear music or when you're writing something, is it a process of like, oh man, like I found that connection? Or does it take a second sometimes? Or is it always immediate? Or is it just different depending on what it is you're doing?
Well, sometimes it doesn't come. It just depends. It's how open you are. For me, I think the more you get into the, I call it the practice of connecting, because as a songwriter, my belief in it is that, you know, we take something, we connect to the other realm. So we go into spirit or into the other side, and we bring something that was not here. And then when we're done at these 4 hours of the session or however long the session is, something that was not here on this plane is now here, that no one's ever heard, that no one experienced. Now we all get to experience it together. So I think the more that you learn to be open to that space, the more frequently it comes.
What an incredible answer. Thank you. In any career, we stand on the shoulders of giants. On stage, you were the original Stevie Wonder in Motown the Musical on Broadway, and in London's West End, you appeared as the soul of Michael Jackson in Thriller Live. How did performing as these artists affect your artistry?
I think it stretched me a bit. I mean, I've always been fans of all these artists. It stretched me in the way that when you play them on stage, you're not just, it's less liberties you can take, because you're portraying someone that people know. And so you try to, it makes you dive deeper into their artistry, deeper into their persona, into their mannerisms, because you have to be believable to people coming that they're seeing someone that they know, that they feel that they already know. And so I think it made me dive deep, especially with Stevie. It made me really dive deeper into him. And, you know, as I was going through that process, which was really kind of cool, there were times where I started saying to myself, like, you know, he was blind, he couldn't see. So during the rehearsal period, like, I would close my eyes and like make myself not open my eyes. And it made me experience music in a different way. And I was like, oh, maybe this is why his writing was so vivid, because everything is in his mind, your mind's eye become much stronger. Like the visuals, even though you can't see, you can see, you know, you can still see, you know what I mean, in the mind's eye. And so I think it really stretched me to understand music from a different place, almost, I want to say necessarily like a handicap, but from a handicap, from a place, to restrict yourself from something that you normally use readily to create, to go into a form of a deprivation, if you will, to still perform to a higher level with that handicap kind of thing.
That's amazing. You know, in the upcoming program at the BPO, you'll be performing works from Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson and Marvin Gaye. But I want to talk about that. But first, I want to ask a question about your original material. Many of your albums features covers and original material. What inspires your songwriting?
Different things. Sometimes I write from my own experiences, and sometimes I write from, you know, you have conversation with friends or overhear people talking on the plane. I feel like these songs show up everywhere. You know, sometimes with people walking, I live in New York, so sometimes you walk in the street, well, not sometimes, all the time you walk down the street and people are arguing and yelling and people say strange things. And sometimes the way in which people, in a moment of anger, in a moment of joy, in a moment of, you know, just being foolish, people will say words in a way that you kind of not heard them before. And you go, oh, I need to write that down. This sounds like a song, you know, you know. And so, for lyrics, that's how it comes to me. Melodies come to me almost infinitely. For some reason, it's very weird. I remember when I first moved to New York and I was performing out, Ashford and Simpson, Valerie Simpson and Nick Ashford, they kind of took me under their wing. And I remember one day I had done a show at the Sugar Bar, at their bar, and Nick came to me a couple of days later. He's like, you know, I love the way you hear melodies and how you see. He said, why don't you come to the house and would you be open to coming to the house and writing with us? And I was like, me writing with Ashford and Simpson? Hell yeah, let's make it happen. He's like, because I just want to pick your brain about, you know, how you hear melodies. And I was like, and I want to pick your brain about these lyrics and how you have these, connect these words so beautifully. And so I remember going over there, because for me, melodies just come. As soon as I hear music, you can play three chords and I can come up with four different melodies in like 2 minutes. Wow. So the melodies come for me really easy. Lyrics are harder, so I try to keep my ears open and then keep, I have like a book or me notes on my phone where I keep jotting down things that I hear or ideas or concepts, so that when it's time to get into the writing, it's not, you have something that's already started.
That's beautiful.
But that's how I usually do it.
One of the songs that sort of is attributed to you that's on the BPO program that I listened to and really hit me hard was Strong Men Can. That's an incredible song. I'd love to know, what's the audience reaction like when this song is performed live?
It's one of those, but that song, by the way, was written with Valerie Simpson. That was a co-write that she did. Because her and Nick became my industry parents, before I did the whole Imagine Marvin record, I had done I Want You and as a demo, I had done a version of it. And I wanted to play it for her. Me and my manager went over and I wanted to play it for her and get her opinion about whether she thought it was something there, because I didn't want the songs to sound like Marvin Gaye. I wanted to honor Marvin Gaye, but not be a clone. So it's not like a two covers album, it's like reimagined. So it feels just as native on me that it did on him. So I found that sweet spot, and she was like, I think there's something there. And I know you wrote, you wrote all of Marvin Gaye and Kevin Terrell's early hits. I was like, would you be open and doing a co-write for this new album? And she was like, let me think about it. And then 3 days later, she sent me a voice memo of her with that melody of that chorus. And I think even the first verse. And she was like, so now we just need a second verse and a bridge. And I was like, beautiful. And as soon as I played it, and then the note, before she texted me the note, she was like, I usually don't just send people my voice memos from my phone. I usually go into the studio and I'll doctor it up a little bit. But she said, but I think you'll get it. And so she sent me this voice memo and I immediately started smiling. And then within, I would say probably 20 minutes, I had another verse and a chorus, because it was so immediate for me. And when people hear it, I think it's immediate for them. It sounds like a song that you already know. And it's such a powerful song, and and thematically, especially in our current climate, and especially even when it was written, that we were, you know, that was during, you know, just before the pandemic, you know, was happening. So it was just at a special time. But the audience reaction is good. Most people say after they heard, they say, you should do more of your original stuff in this show. I want to hear more of your original stuff, because that song is amazing. Sort of a catch-22, because you want to put more of original stuff, but you know, when people know you, but you got a household name, know you kind of thing, then, you know, the songs is what got you out. And now you experience all of me when you're here. But so, you know, so it's been that, but the audience response to that song is usually very, very immediate.
Yeah, and I would say deep, right? I mean, just even not hearing it live, but hearing it kind of a studio recording of it, I was like, ooh, it really hit me hard in the soul, you know?
Yeah. It's one of those ones that, like I said, those sort of stream of consciousness, kind of you like just open to the moment, you get that first spark and you just let it flow. And that's pretty much how that one came. It was not a struggle to write that one at all.
Excellent. You have been on Broadway, but your new album is called Off Broadway. It's releasing May 2nd. It features R&B and soul jazz inspired takes of Broadway hits. How did this project come about?
So my manager, Elizabeth, said that it was time for me to like reconnect with the Broadway audience. And 54 Below is, you know, the iconic Studio 54. There's a music venue in the basement, which I think used to be the speakeasy where all the gangsters and stuff used to hang out. Now it's a music venue for the Broadway community. And it's probably one of the most prestigious places that a Broadway actor could showcase themselves in a cabaret setting. I mean, there's others, Don't Tell Mom and stuff like that, but I think 54 Below is the premier one at this point. And so we want to do a show there. And so I invited Scott Jacoby, who produced my single that just came out last Friday, Rising Up. And he came to the show, he brought his wife. And so after the show, the next day he called my manager, Elizabeth. He was like, the show was so amazing. I feel like there's a concept here, like we should do a version of this show as an album. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Because during the show, I had storytelling and I like told my story, my New York story, in context with Broadway songs and some originals and some new songs I had also written with Ray. And I was like, cool, this is a bet. And he was like, you know, and we can use my studio, so we don't have to pay for studio time. All you guys have to do is pay for the musicians. I'll mix it and we'll get it mastered. And so it ended up being far beyond what any of us dreamed it would be. I mean, I can't wait for people to hear this record. It is, and especially if you're any fan of Broadway, because some of these songs, we basically took Broadway songs and made a Ryan Shaw record out of it. So if you like soul music, and if you're kind of a fan of Broadway and you're familiar with Broadway, but you also love soul music and gospel and R&B, there's
I don't even know what to say, but just get ready.
Yeah, I mean, that's clear. I mean, even the track listing itself is like, you go from Jesus Christ Superstar Gethsemane to the waitress, She Used to Be Mine, which is like, I can't wait to hear those two next to each other and your takes on, like, I can't wait to hear your take on She Used to Be Mine. It's an incredible song, but then to kind of potentially flip it or sort of reconceive of it, it's going to be really, really amazing.
Yeah, I think the one I'm most excited for people to hear from the new album actually is Gethsemane, but it is not what you think.
Good.
None of this is what you think.
You mentioned your new single, Rising Up. Can you tell us what inspired the song and why it had to be released right now?
Well, Rising Up, this whole new album. So I was working on a new album. Rising Up is from the new album that's going to be fully released first quarter of next year. And that, so that's the title of the album too, Rising Up. And the first single, quite a few of these songs that were written, the majority was written during the pandemic. And so I realized that a lot of the energy that I was writing with, and I wrote quite a few of these songs with Tim Myers, who was a former member of One Republic, they carry a similar energy. And it's an energy of struggle, overcoming struggle, of unity, survival. And so my manager just one day randomly went through like our folder, me and Tim's folder. She's like, these songs in here are really great and they all have a similar theme. I feel like this is the beginning of a record. And I said, well, let me go back and listen. And you know, when you're in it, you don't realize that these themes are forming because you're just in the moment and writing what's today. You know, we've been locked down for a few days, so this is what I'm feeling today. Oh, now we've been locked down for a few years. So now this is what I'm feeling today. It's like, shit, I don't know if I can say that. But
you can
I
say that, it's fine. Mute
Okay, but it's that. So, you know, so they came out of that, but Rising Up particularly, the reason we chose that as the new song, because it's really about us coming together and making our voices heard. And during that period of time, you know, that was through the pandemic, was Black Lives Matter, it was the end of the Me Too, like everybody making their voices heard. And even now in this new, you know, moment of, you know, trans liberation and everything that's just happening, I just think for everyone's voice to be heard, the song just represents that. And I mean, for me, like like my favorite line in the songs, it's the way out is the way in. From the depths, we will ascend again. We're rising up. You know, because like how we got into this mess, we got to come back out. And basically, it's not like sometimes you can't move forward without moving a little bit backwards. Like sometimes we have to tear down some of the systems or reverse some of the things that are happening. So, you know, we can't judge everything by what it feels like. You have to judge it by the look at the overall picture of where we can go. You know, even now, like people are really discouraged about all the things that is happening from the White House and the things that are being reversed, like DEI and all those things. But I think instead of us being so fixated on this is happening, this is bad, find moments of opportunity in it. I mean, I kind of liken it to the stock market. You know, a lot of people who have money in the game see the stock market crash and they're like, oh, I'm going to kill myself. But other people who don't have skin in the game, like, oh, this is a great time for me to get in. Which people will we be? Like, who will we be in this moment? Will we be the people that just keeps kicking and screaming, saying, oh, I can't believe I can't believe this? Or will we find opportunities for us to change things?
Yeah.
And that's what Rising Up, I feel, is about.
Thank you very much. That is available on all streaming platforms now. You're coming to Buffalo next month on May 3rd for the Masters of R&B program that's going to be performed at the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra at Klein Hands Music Hall. This program includes so many hits from Bill Withers, Marvin Gaye, Isaac Hayes, Michael Jackson, Prince, Stevie Wonder. What do you think audiences will experience hearing these great songs that they know with the orchestral arrangements?
Joy is the only word I can, the main word that comes to my mind. The show, when we premiered the show in Virginia a couple of years ago, it's just a super joyous show. It is nostalgia, it's joy, you get original, they get to find out a little bit more about me and my story and my journey. I'm a ham, as you can tell. So it's just a super fun show. And, you know, I have my singers coming with me and, you know, they have their moments to shine. It's just such a fun show. And for me to, you know, my thing about doing this show is the masters, you know, and we couldn't pick all the masters. So there's some, you know, people gonna come on and be like, oh, you forgot about this person. You forgot about Solomon Burke. I know, but you can't put everybody in 2 hours. Y'all gonna sit for 4 hours? Then we can go. We can keep going. But I had to pick. And so I just picked those that were really closest to my heart and to my musical experience so that I could you know, interpret it in a way that felt organic. So that's how that happened. But it was so, it's just a really fun show. Really fun show.
What do you hope audience members on the way home, if they're driving in the car or they're on, you know, the taking the bus back or taking the train back, what do you hope they're talking about?
I hope they're talking about when they're going to see it again. Basically, I want it to be that the kind of experience where they go, I want to see this again, or I wish it was 2 days so I can come back tomorrow. And also just diving deeper into my own music, rediscovering these artists that I've like, because I go back to Jackie Wilson, and a lot of people ain't talked about Jackie Wilson in a while, but, you know, start also just rediscovering the catalog of these amazing artists, like such as Marvin Gaye and such as, you know, we lost Prince recently, relatively recently. So just to, you know, jump back into these artists and their just revive, because I mean, the music today is good and it happens, but it's all based on those roots. Like those are the shoulders that we're all standing on today. And sometimes when we just go back to basics, it's healing, you know?
Great. My final question here is, if somebody was unsure about coming to Klein Hans Music Hall, or they were like, I don't know about an orchestra, or maybe that's not for me, but they did want to see masters of R&B, what might you say to them?
I would say, forget your concept of what you think an orchestra can do. Because I had a similar concept when I first got into the symphony world. I was like, oh, they're doing like the strings and stuff. And when I first sang my first symphony show, which was in Houston with the Houston Symphony, and I got into that first rehearsal and I started singing, and I think it was All of Me, a John Legend song. It was like a mixtape of R&B. And to hear that kind of sound, it's like, how do I even describe it? It's like 70 musicians on stage and this wall of sound comes out at you and it's full and it's not super loud, but it's a very unique experience that I think most people and every person that has come that, because a lot of people come to these shows because of the material. And when they leave, they say, I've never experienced this. This is my first time to the symphony. And I came because of the program, never knowing what a symphony could sound like. Different than classical. Like the pop's world is a whole nother thing. And it basically takes the songs that we know and love and it flushes and it builds on them in a very beautiful way. And some of these orchestrations go, I'll almost take some of them to the next level, honestly. You know, and it's still as danceable because there's still a full rhythm section. There's still the bass, drum, and keyboards. Everything you know is there. It's just added upon. And so the strings that you would hear in a Motown song, you know, is imagine that amplified by 24 violins in your face. It's another level. It's a whole nother level.
Fantastic. I hope all of our listeners go and buy a ticket. They'll be available in the show notes. Before I end the interview, I always like to ask, is there anything that you feel left unsaid or anything that you'd like to share with our listeners about the upcoming program at the BPO or anything else or anything we missed in the interview?
I would just say it's just a general thing about live music. I live in New York City, which was one of the live music capitals of the world. And live music, especially post-pandemic, has really been suffering. Even to this day, it's been a couple of years or two, almost 2.5, almost 3 years since we officially said it was over. And people are still afraid to go out and still afraid to connect. And I think we have to get out. I think music, concerts, all even at sporting events, all those places where we get together to have an experience together, we have to fight to support those things because that is what builds our community. That is our community. And if we let it get to a point where all the venues shut down and we're just stuck in the house, that will change society in a way that we don't want. So I would just say fight to support live music as much as you can. And not just because it's going to pay my bills, but because it's going to help all of us. It just helps it's a community thing. It is our thing. It's how we connect as human beings. It's so important that we don't let live music, live sports, any of that stuff die. We can't just be at home. We have to get back out. We have to participate in life. We have to meet. We have to connect. That energy, that vibration can change anything without us speaking. Us coming together changes things without us speaking. We don't have to really worry about what law has been passed or what is happening. If we are together in our communities, that is more powerful than anything.
Thank you very much for your time. It was a real pleasure to chat with you today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ryan Shaw. Masters of Soul will be presented by the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra on Saturday, May 3rd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available in the show notes and at bpo.org. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like this show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.